And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, in thinking about politics this week, I couldn't help but think about LeBron James and the fact that he's going to our local team, the 76ers. And I thought to myself, now here's a situation, a sports situation, a business situation that's clearly structured from the top down. There's a strategy set by the league leadership, and every component underneath them, whether it's the team owners or the team players, has to follow that structure and that approach, that strategy. So the team can only spend so much money on salaries cumulatively, and the players know that there's no sense asking for more than they can ask for in terms of what the team as a whole can spend, because it'd be impossible under the rules for them to get it. So they have to temper their ambition in terms of that. In other words, there's a pyramid, and it's logical and it makes sense. If we look at our political party system, the Republicans operate that way now, especially since Trump has turned the Republican Party into a national party, but the Democrats don't. The Democrats are a collection, not even of 50 parties, because in some states, the parties in the state has components at war with each other, and the party leadership has almost no say in how the state party operates. We had that here. We don't yet know whether the current leadership is going to be able to overcome the problem that they inherited. But are you struck by the fact that we can run sports properly, but we can't run politics properly?
In any entity, whether it's sports or politics, what we know or we should find out is that leadership matters. That's perhaps the most important thing. And where there's weak leadership, things have a tendency to fall apart. Where there's strong leadership, then things tend to coalesce. But strength alone is not the measure. Strength that is smart is the measure. There, you can get strong people that are kind of dumb running things and don't care about what's happening as long as they're taken care of or their cronies are taken care of. But strong and smart, it tends to be the winning policy, I think, over anything else. And as you said, when you go around the country, you see various degrees in by state and then within the states. You can have poor county organizations and you can have good county organizations. You can see where things get organized well. Remember in Nevada, they used to talk about the Harry Reid organization and how well he ran it, the success that people had there. And then in other states, things didn't do so well. Pennsylvania, there was somewhat of a lack of party leadership. Sharif Street managed to lose all the Democratic row or all the row offices in Pennsylvania. And the presidential vote in Pennsylvania, we're still trying to recover from that. We'll see how Gene DePasquale does. By the way, Gene was a row officer, and then he lost the last time he was running for attorney general, which is a big deal in every state. Winning the attorney generalship really matters, particularly when we're going into these contested presidential elections. We had Josh Shapiro as the attorney general for the 2020 election. We're going into the 2028 and we could have Dave Sun. And whether he would pursue things or allow things to be pursued is important. Those are important races that are out there. They're also important because they build a bench for people. You know, for a while there, the Democrats in Pennsylvania didn't have much of a bench. Shapiro came along and became a strong part of the bench of Pennsylvania. We've had, you know, ever since the Constitutional Convention in the late 60s, where they let the governor run for re-election, where they're two terms rather than one term governors. For a while there, it was always alternated. You had two terms for a Democrat, two terms for a Republican, two terms for a Democrat, two terms for a Republican, and then the Democrats finally broke that. You know, Tom Wolf was succeeded by Josh Shapiro. Those things, you know, will matter, and they do matter in how they're organized.
In Pennsylvania, what's the story with registrations? I mean, that surely it's an indication of how the approaches by the various parties count, or how the impact that they have.
Yeah. Well, you know, for years, you listeners to the show have heard me scream about registration. The Democrats were up by hundreds of over 600,000 at one point in registration, and the Republicans put on a concerted effort. There was a guy named Scott Pressler who came in, and they chipped away and chipped away and chipped away. And the Democrats lost hundreds of thousands of registered voters, not necessarily to Republicans, although a good chunk went to Republicans, some went to independent. But Gene DePasquale has only been in less than a year, and it looks like he staunched the bleeding. The last numbers I saw is that the Democrats had increased for the first time in a long time their registration by about 24,000-25,000 votes, and the Republicans had only increased theirs by about 4,500. So it was a net pickup. Now, it wasn't a huge pickup, but it, you know, it's going back in the right direction. On the county level, we still see that problem. It's Luzerne County continues to be a loss for the Democrats. You know, for a while there, the Democrats were just sort of not paying attention. They were saying, well, yeah, these people are registered Democrat, but they're voting Republican, the Reagan Republicans. But then the Democrats started losing elections, and they couldn't be so cavalier, but they didn't know how to turn it around. And they still, down in Luzerne County, are having problems turning things around. They've done a little bit. Lackawanna County hasn't been as bad, but they need to get back in the positive things. Remember, only a couple years ago, you had a Democratic president whose roots were from Scranton. We had a United States senator from Scranton. We had a House of Representatives, a representative who was essentially from Scranton. You know, that should have translated into a lot of political clout and power here, and it didn't.
Why?
I think the state organization was weaker and didn't help. And I don't think the candidates fully understood that when there was this vacuum left by the state, that they needed to step up. I know I once talked to Matt Cartwright about the registration issue, and he said, that's not my job. My job is, you know, to get reelected in my election, not to have to spend resources or to concentrate resources on the registration. He said, that's the party's job.
That's interesting, because I interviewed Tom Wolf when he ran for governor. I interviewed Fetterman when he ran for attorney general.
For lieutenant governor.
Lieutenant governor, I'm sorry. And for senator, and I interviewed Bob Casey when he ran for re-election, and I asked each one of them, what do you think your responsibility is to building the Democratic Party, and how will you help build the Pennsylvania Democratic Party? And each one of them looked at me quite blankly and said, that's not my job.
Right.
So whose job is it if it's not the people who everybody in the world thinks of as the leaders of the Democratic Party? Whose job is it?
You know, I was there when you asked that of Tom Wolf. And he looked back and he said, "My job is to get reelected."
Exactly. Exactly.
That was his answer.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they don't. Well, this has been part of politics. This is over the evolution or the devolution of party politics over the last, you know, 60, 70 years. Going back, in history, the parties were used to be creatures of political machines. The ones in the big cities, but there were the states also had political machines, and things started to change in the 1960s. About that, you know, Pennsylvania's the guy who headed the machine in Pennsylvania used to be Dave Lawrence from Pittsburgh, and then he got elected governor. Then we had along came a guy named Milton Schaap, who decided to run against the party and put his own money into it and created his own political machine. He was unsuccessful the first time, but then he became successful. And he was, I believe, the first two-term Democratic governor. He beat out Bob Casey, who was, not the senator, but the senator's father originally. Bob Casey was good at running for auditor general or state treasurer, but he wasn't very good at running for governor. He got defeated several times before he eventually became the governor in the 1990s. But the Democrats had this individualism. The Republicans relied more on the machine. And when the machine fell down, they didn't win. But they stuck to more of a machine type of situation.
It's interesting because in many big cities, there are machines built around local bosses. In New York City, for example, there was in the upper part of Manhattan around the George Washington Bridge and in the neighboring borough, the Bronx, there was a machine of basic Dominican businessmen and politicians around a fellow named Espaillat, who was there, the leader of that machine, the creator of that machine, and the congressman who ultimately became the head of the Hispanic caucus in Congress. He got knocked out in this last Democratic primary by a DSA candidate running a grassroots campaign. Very interesting. Well, knocked out the campaign, knocked out that machine.
Well, look back a number of years ago, Matt Cartwright brought in a buddy of his who was a congressman who was labeled the successor to Nancy Pelosi by the name of Joe Crowley, who had his own machine.
Right.
And a year or so later, I'm watching the New York primary results, and Joe Crowley is getting his head handed to him by someone known as Alexandria Octavio
Cortez.
Cortez, yeah, AOC.
A bartender.
A bartender.
Right.
Who, made her second attempt at that, but she had a great organization.
Right, exactly. Rank and file organization. And you see this throughout the country, that this machine politics doesn't work. It may have worked.
Well, it works.
It's not working right now.
It works until it doesn't.
It works until it doesn't. In some places, it's replaced by politics as the commodification of politics. You know, you sell the candidacy like you sell Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola is better than Pepsi. And you have lots of ads that prove why Coca-Cola tastes better, or things go better with Coke. And you have, and so therefore, whoever can come up with the most money and buy the most television ads has a leg up. But then you get a guy like Bernie Sanders comes around, discovers he can raise almost as much money and doesn't have to do that, and can mobilize hundreds of thousands of people on the ground and doesn't need the television, but can get the television anyway. And stimulates a national movement. And then it takes the machine combining to make sure he doesn't get the nomination of whatever he's looking for, in this case, the presidency. But that's a hell of a way to run politics. It certainly doesn't produce the kind of policy that you would imagine dispassionate consideration of the good of the country would produce. You get guys like Fetterman who run one way and rule another way, to the extent they rule.
To the extent that they rule, although, people keep forgetting that he votes with the Democrats over 90% of the time, but it's the things that he doesn't vote with them that get all of the attention and tend to be some of the larger things.
Well, he didn't vote with them this last week when the Senate did not approve the rebuke to Trump and the demand that Trump stop the war in Iran because of many reasons. He voted with the Republicans to continue the war in Iran. That's a big issue. That's a big item. That's not small potatoes.
And that's going to, it's going to be interesting in 2 years as to where he stands. The Republicans are trying to recruit him. I think that if he leaves the Democratic Party, he will become an independent, where he's very popular with independents in Pennsylvania. And because if he, even if he became a Republican, I don't, I'm not sure the Republicans would back him fully in a primary or what have you. But the Democrats don't seem to be wanting to back him as a Democrat. And we're just going to have to see, or see if he runs again. I still think that in some ways the stroke that he suffered has has affected him in ways that are perhaps more subtle, but they do go to his thought processes.
You mean if you have a stroke and your mentality is impaired, you become a Republican? Just a thought. It's an approach. Okay,
Well,
maybe.
I
Could
mean,
be.
there are people that have said being a Republican is a mental disorder in itself, but that's certainly MAGA is being accused of that.
That's really a mistake because, while it's true that if you're a working person and you support MAGA, there's something you haven't thought through properly because everything that the MAGA program promotes is an attack on you and your living standards. So if you support that and you're not suicidal, you got to be asked, what are you a racist? I mean, what's the reason? Because all of your material standards are being attacked by them.
Well, that's the thing is what people were induced to prioritize things over their own economic well-being. And you mentioned race is one of them. We saw it, anti-gay is plays very heavily into that.
Yeah, these are people who demand freedom, but not for you, only for them.
Well, that's
Why
the thing.
somebody who wants to have a sexuality as he or she chooses it should not be allowed to have it and is not allowed to have it by people who demand perfect freedom? It's a contradiction that can't be addressed. There's no way to understand that contradiction, except to say you're lying when you say you're for freedom.
I've sent you articles about how many times you read it's almost every week that some Republican, or some religious conservative gets arrested for being, child pornography or pedophilia or doing these things. It's, almost epidemic within the Republican Party. It's not to say it doesn't exist with Democrats, but the hypocrisy that exists there is enormous. And of course, Republican office holders, there's the whispering campaign that many of these people are closeted gays. Even in this day and age, they don't want to come out of the closet or what have you. And Lindsey Graham was perhaps one of the most notable ones that was spoken of in that regard. But they prioritize other things. And that's the way of politics. You can vote. I have always said you're an American. You can vote for someone because of the color of their hair or whether they don't have hair or whether You know, they like dogs, they don't like dogs. There's not necessarily a rationality to things, or the rationality differs from your idea of rationality and my idea of rationality.
Well, but the idea that living standards, how whether people can live, whether they have enough to eat, whether their children will have opportunities and for them in their lives, that seems to be right now uppermost in people's lives and people's minds and how they're approaching politics. It's subsumed by the word affordability. Trump says it's a phony word. He doesn't mean it's a phony word. He means it's a concept you shouldn't be concerned about. You should be concerned about my wealth, not your possibilities, not your
wealth. But you know, let's go back. Things finally got so bad in 1932 that you wound up with the New Deal.
Right.
But it was a hard slog. A lot of people's minds had to change.
Right.
Look at what's happening today. Go to Iowa, where the farmers are getting killed for a number of reasons. The tariffs have hurt them. They can't sell their goods. They can't get fertilizer because of what's happening in the Strait of Hormuz, that the natural gas, the LNG that's used to convert to fertilizer can't get through. And yet you go to meetings and you see how difficult it is for these people to say, I'm not going to vote Republican this time. Gradually, you're starting to see that happen, but it's very hard for them to make that that switch or that change. It's so hardened in their ideas and their structures that Republicans stand for them, stand for the things that they prioritize, that they have, that changing that model is going to be hard. We do see that the polling on the gubernatorial level in Iowa is showing some signs of that. The Senate race may not be as strong, but, you know, and Obama carried Ohio first time he ran. It used to be a swing state, but you still see that this hardcore MAGA coming through, and Trump seems to know how to play it.
And it may be that these people never change. It may be that it's only their children that change. That's very common. I mean, was it the old folks who made the American Revolution or the young folks who made the American Revolution? I mean, I think that Hamilton was in his 20s, right?
It was the educated who made the revolution in many respects, at least the wording of it. But, you know, it was the farmers and the shopkeepers who kept it going.
Yeah, it's true. Jefferson wrote the words, but there weren't that many Jeffersons to fill the ranks. The ranks had to be filled by common people.
Right, but the inspiration came from the Jeffersons. And,
that's always true.
Adams, and let's not give short shrift to Thomas Paine.
And to Thomas Paine, that's right. And all immigrants, you might say. Right?
Well, yeah. They were, you know, yes, yes. There were a lot of immigrants.
Well, I want to get back to the party structure, because it seems to me that the Republicans, odious though their programs may be to the majority of the people, and their programs are odious to the majority of the people when you go down the line, point by point, program by program, what they want item by item, people oppose it 2-1, 3-1. 75% of the people oppose this, 66% of the people oppose that. There's nothing in their programs that the majority of the people support. Nothing. And yet they have a power within the country because they're centralized and the structure follows the leader. The leader is Trump. He has his lieutenants where he has to have them. He's able to mobilize the voters on a local level to make sure that the leadership of the organization on a local level is in his hands. The Democrats don't even think to do that. And I don't, I mean, it's like sending a fellow with a slingshot to fight a tank. Something's wrong. Only the Democrats. It's not good to say that, well, the Republicans have nationalized politics. So what? Of course they nationalized politics. This is a nation. People get up and say, "Oh, I'm all for Idaho politics, Idaho values. I'm all for Pennsylvania values." There's no such thing as Pennsylvania values that are different than West Virginia values or California values. They're values of nationwide. And an attempt to dream up some sort of statification of values is preposterous. What, in Idaho they love children, and in California they hate children? In Idaho, you get respect for your mother, and in California, you don't have respect for it. It's nonsense. It's all a lie to fool people. But the Democrats fall back on that in their actual activity, in their actual structure. In the party organizations, they've suppressed the discussion of policy. And in the organizational work, they're incompetent for the most part. Otherwise, you wouldn't have a situation like Graham Plattner.
Yeah, who really wasn't fully vetted, and I'm reminded of the Lincoln saying: "You can fool some of the people all of the time, and all of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all of the time." They got away with fooling a lot of the people some of the time, and then it just became too much. They couldn't fool them anymore.
Yeah.
In Maine, and this weekend, they are the Mainers are choosing a new Senate candidate, and if it comes out to be Tony Jackson, the first poll in Maine had him up against Susan Collins by 3 points, although he still hadn't hit the majority, the 50% level. But you'll have to see how that works out.
And some people say, well, we have to have an absolute majority. We have to have an absolute majority. We have to win everybody over. You can't win everybody over. You're not gonna win everybody over. At the end of World War II, the most disastrous war in human history, the Nazis stood for a horrible program. And in progressing and in enforcing their program, they brought total destruction and ruin to the German people. And at the end of that war, there were still millions of people who supported the Nazis, defeated as they were. Well, that's a lesson. You have to win. You can't convert everybody. It's just not going to happen. But you still have to win.
You still have to win. And Trump, at least up until now, seems to have understood people better than the Democrats have. He came out and right at the beginning and said, "I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and I'd still get votes." And he's right. I mean, of all the grift and everything that he's done, there's still people that rationalize voting for him.
That's right. Okay, let them
They're
do it. The point is, there's everybody else. In
Well, but he
final
was able.
analysis, he's able to manipulate, he's able to rig, and he's rigged the districts, he's rigged the election. There's no doubt about it. That defeating them is going to be superhuman effort to have super majorities, not just majorities, but okay, that's what he's done. Then you have to act to make sure you can't do that again.
Well, and at some point he may have hit the critical mass with all of the rigging and all of the grift, and of course a couple of things: the tariffs were unpopular, the war is unpopular, and $4 plus gallon gas is very unpopular, and he can't.
And a 50% rise in electrical rates over the last 4 years is extremely unpopular, and he's promoting data centers.
And he can't say, "Who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes?"
Right.
much anymore.
Right. Right.
We know what people see every day,
Yeah.
but that doesn't mean that another, person can't arise that does the same thing that Trump did. There was Huey Long in the 30s, and Joe McCarthy in the 50s.
Right. Well, but that's the point of politics. That's why it's important to participate in politics and important to insist upon the significance of policy and not on, mystical belief.
It's
Politics.
important to get out there and vote and not let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Right. And with that, we come to the end, because the perfect would be for us to extend this discussion. but reality says we'd be cut off by the stations that carry the show.
All right. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.